809 WGCL. It's Tuesday, so we usually check in with City Councilman Tim Mayer. We didn't last Tuesday, Tim, because you were awfully busy counting ballots. Tell us a brief summation of how your Election Day Tuesday went, and how are your paper cuts?
No paper cuts, fortunately.
You're an expert. An expert, I tell you.
That's true. It went very well. I think there were probably about 40 people counting ballots.
Was that enough people, Tim?
Yes. We were done before noon, believe it or not.
Great.
So, yeah. So you basically divide into teams of two, one Republican, one Democrat, and the whole process is to make sure that the letter of it is the letter that is sent requesting an absentee ballot. The signature on that matches the signature on the envelope. The envelope is opened. The ballot is removed and turned upside down, so you cannot see who voted, which is then transferred to a scanner person who will scan the ballot into the election. So it went very well.
Luckily for you, you got done by noon, so you go home and get a little bit of a nap because you had a busy night. Didn't you have a busy meeting last week as well on Wednesday?
We did have a busy meeting last Wednesday. That is true.
Still going. Ended it
we wrestled once again with the demolition delay ordinance, which we finally came to resolution on. And
for those of us that didn't get caught up with that, refresh us on what you did resolve.
Well, basically the state had gone through the community and done a survey of the properties within the community and basically said anything that is 40 plus years older is considered contributing or a greater level to the historic inventory within the community. That doesn't mean that all those houses that are included in there are historic in nature, but it just gives you an indication that, you know, that the state is looking at those as contributing to the fabric of the community, so to speak. Because Bloomington has what is referred to as a demolition delay, somebody living in a house that was built, say, in 1955, and they want to add on to the house, they would have to go technically before the city's Historic Preservation Commission to modify that home if it exceeded a certain percentage of modification to the home. So what we have done is we have passed an ordinance that includes surveys from 2001 and 2007, included the state's new survey, but we have removed those homes that are considered what they call contributing from that purview until such time as a local survey can be done. So it's kind of complicated, but we've basically accepted the state's survey but modified it to make it a little less onerous for property owners.
I think I follow you.
Yeah, I know.
So,
you asked for it.
I did, and you know what? This is my fault, but that's a good thing that I did. So, what's next? What's now? Is it done? See you later.
What'll happen now is any significant homes in those areas will be included in the purview of the Historic Preservation Commission.
So basically what happened was the state came to you and said, here's what we think. Here's an arbitrary number. Everybody agreed on that arbitrary number, and you're going to move forward with...
That's technically yes. And okay. They do it on a 10-year cycle. So, you know, it's always being updated every 10 years. So it's just something that, you know, we have to be aware of because we have the ordinance in Bloomington that is referred to as demolition delay, which does give the Historic Preservation Commission the opportunity to review demolitions of potentially historic properties.
Let me ask you a silly question. The difference between the demolition delay and zoning would be what? Because you can't build certain things in certain places, and now this, not now, but
yeah,
this says you can't change something that's already there to a certain this or that. God, those are technical terms.
Yeah, I think so. You set zoning aside because it looks at everything, residential, commercial, et cetera. So
okay.
It takes in the entire community. What demolition delay does, it looks at a property that is potentially going to be modified. Let's say you have a home that's built in, 1950.
Sure, and it's falling 55. Apart, and I need to replace it because the roof is bad, the foundation's off, and everything else.
Well, if you're going to add, let's say you have a ranch house and you wanted to make it a two-story house, that is a major modification.
Okay.
If you have a ranch house and you want to change the front door, that is not a major modification. Yeah. And nothing will occur to you other than you put a new front door in. You don't need that review. But if you're going to change that house, that ranch house, into a two-story house.
Or if you want to knock it down on a piece of property and build something new in that place.
That's the next step.
Well, let me ask you about that step, though, Tim. My house is 50 years old. It's a wreck. It would cost me more to fix it, build it to what it should be, than it would to tear it down and start all over again. And somebody's going to say, I can't tear it down and start all over again?
I think what the issue is that if you own a ranch house and all the neighborhoods around you, your neighborhood is all ranch house. I mean, think of a subdivision that was built, say, in the 50s and 60s. Sherwood Oaks, some of the Park Ridge, Park Ridge East, those types of neighbors, Grandview. All the homes are similar in nature.
Right.
And so let's say you decided you wanted to tear down your house and build a three-story house, which you couldn't do, but you want to build something that's much bigger and much grander than what is surrounding.
I'll build what everyone else has got. I just can't afford to rehab the house that's there now.
Then I don't think you would have an issue with it.
Okay.
But if you wanted to replace it with something that
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now vastly different than what is currently there.
Tomorrow night you have a committee of the whole meeting, and you're going to talk about signs. But when you and I were talking before we went on the air, we're not talking about street signs for 30 miles an hour and stuff like that. This one's going to be a little tricky.
Yeah, this is an ordinance that we have to actually take up and modify, which is our city sign ordinance for signs into what is referred to the public right of way. So the donut hole in a roundabout, the tree plots in front of people's property, that's the area between the curb and the sidewalk, where the trees are and the green grass grows. People who put up signs, say people who have a lawn cutting business, or somebody who does gutter cleaning, or somebody who wants to advertise a theatrical production, those signs will no longer be allowed in that public right-of-way. And that is in response to a Supreme Court decision. And once that decision was made, our city legal staff, being lawyers and doing what they do, they looked at our city ordinance and determined that we would actually be in violation of the court's decision. So we will basically be looking at that sign ordinance and modifying to the point where people will no longer be able to put signs in the right of way. So, for example, when you are downtown in the courthouse square, and
I was just going to bring that up,
put signs in the flower planters.
Yes,
those signs will no longer be allowed there once we pass this ordinance. Now,
so is it true the city's going to build a 70-foot tall wall where we can staple all these signs onto?
No, that's not true. No.
Just spray paint.
So what'll happen now? We cannot regulate political signs on private property.
You can or you cannot?
We cannot.
Private property is the key word to that phrase, correct?
That's right, private property. So in your front yard,
do anything you want.
You can put up as many political signs as you want. You can also put up signs for...
What about historic political signs that are 40 years older?
Well, that's another... You always throw a curveball. I love
that's
it.
That's right. Hold on. Let Tim finish that out there. I rudely interrupted him with my porch. Well, that's it. You have to go before the Historic Sign Commission to put those in your yard.
But if you are a theater lover, you can put up theater signs on your property. So a performance sign.
Yeah, if you want elephant and piggy in your front yard, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, let me throw you a curveball, Tim. If I can't put a sign between my sidewalk and the street, then is the city going to come and mow that for me because it's not mine?
No, that's another part of that's not part of this ordinance. That's another part of the ordinance, though, that it's the property owner's responsibility to maintain that. Yeah,
but I'm having a little trouble understanding that I don't have a right to put a sign there, but I'm responsible for mowing it.
That's true. And you're also responsible to fix the sidewalk if it cracks.
Really?
What if a tree falls?
Yeah, and nobody hears it.
But you see it, and it lands on my house.
Yeah.
Now, if the tree falls...
Yeah, you can't tear down your house.
And remove the tree.
Well, we'd hope so. Yeah. That would be fun. Yeah. Tim Mayer's our guest this morning. City Councilman checks in with us Tuesdays after 8:05. And so that sounds like you've got a busy agenda for tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow I think will be a pretty in-depth discussion about signs and where you can place them and how... We cannot regulate content, and that's basically the bottom line. Another one would be what are referred to as off-premise signs. So, for example, a realtor has a house in a neighborhood, and then they'll put a sign up on
open
the
house.
Corner saying, yeah, open house. Those will have to go on the corner person's property, not in the public right away.
Interesting.
So the realtor would have to go and knock on the door and say, may I put a sign in your yard for this weekend?
This is a done deal, though, Tim, so it wouldn't
That's
do any
Supreme
good
Court.
For the public to come and
well,
say, I don't like
deal.
This.
It's a done deal in that we are bringing our city ordinances in line with the Supreme Court decision. And that decision was an interesting one in that it was a church... had put up directional signs directing people to the church where they ran afoul with this, I'm not even sure what city it was in, but where they ran afoul with the city was that the city said you can put those signs up, but you can only put them up so many days or hours before the event going to that church. And the church disagreed and it ended up at the Supreme Court.
And they got nothing.
Well, the Supreme Court, I think, ruled in their favor.
They ruled in their favor?
Yeah, but it brought up that whole issue of
content?
Public right-of-way.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So interesting. That is interesting, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Here we go, Ellettsville. They're talking about I want to make sure I get this right, the public safety tax.
That is correct.
They have 5 votes of 100. The other votes are where?
The other votes are will be the county council, the city council, and I'm not sure what other bodies join in. But we will be hearing it we will be hearing it after Ellettsville, I believe, and county council make their decision, and the city council will step in.
You have any thoughts on this before we get too deep into that?
Well, I think the issue is that the state has given municipalities and all county governments and all subdivisions within that county the opportunity to raise this tax to pay for public safety, basically. And what we what we know and we see occur on a fairly regular basis is the county and the city and governing units are always having difficulty coming up with enough money to maintain our dispatch center, which basically is a countywide opportunity for police, fire, ambulance.
How is it operating now if it needs such a tremendous shot in the arm?
Well, it operates because people have to go into their budgets and find that money and support it. And at the detriment of other things. So, for example, if it's coming out of county government, the sheriff may not be able to get new cars as soon as they need them, and the same thing may happen for the city of Blue. Bloomington, you know, sewer. And we, you know, we put a property cap, property tax cap on, the state did, on the ability of municipalities to raise taxes. So we're always running short of that needed
money.
Can
I ask you a silly question? I'm going to ask Marty Hawk the same question tomorrow so I don't sound like I'm picking on you. Why didn't we get this all in order before we built the dispatch center instead of vice versa?
I think it's something that's been going on for a long, long time.
Okay, because I know this council never meets anyhow, and it's been around for 100 years, and they never get together on any of this. So it just seems like we're doing this backwards a little bit, or maybe I'm goofy. I don't know.
No, I think it's just incremental. It has a lot to do with the fact that there is that cap on property tax and the ability for municipalities and governments other than state government to raise taxes for needed services, and you know you're starting to see some of that money from the state's rainy day fund coming back now for street infrastructure, street bridges, etc.
Right,
going to the various taxing units, which is a kind of a windfall for us at this point in time.
Help me do a little math here. If passed, it would bring in an estimated $6.9 million in revenue, 30% of which would be set aside to cover funding shortfalls for the dispatch center, which is currently funded through, as you mentioned, a combination of county, city, general funds, and the statewide 911 fund as well. Where's the other 70%? And I don't, again, math confuses me, so that's why I need your help.
Well, I think if you look at today's paper, you know, some of the comments from especially from law enforcement and fire departments, they're talking about the need to have that 70%, some portion of that 70% to maintain and enhance their services.
Yeah, it seems like there's a plan for the 30%, but where's the other 70% going? It just goes into your bucket now instead of the general fund bucket or some other bucket.
Well,
is that the discussion?
Yeah, I think that's part of what the discussion will be.
Okay.
I think that's what I'm seeing unfold in the Ellettsville discussion. You know, two of the members are saying, well, you know, where, you know, how will we be using this additional revenue income? So, and I think you'll probably see that at every level that comes along, you know, where are we going to invest that 70%? So,
Tim,
I think that's a worthy discussion to have.
Absolutely.
How does this vote come down? Is it majority vote? Is it two-thirds? What's going to finally decide this?
You know, I don't have the answer for that. I suspect it's majority, but I don't have the answer. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And different players in this thing have more votes than others.
That is correct.
If the dispatch is so important, why does it only get 30%?
Well, I think what's been determined is that would be adequate
to cover the expenses.
To cover the expenses,
and it's just the number ends up being 30%, not 30% of the number. Does that make okay? I got you.
I think that's right.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask Marty tomorrow because I know you guys all dabble in finance. You got a bunch of other things going on, so we're just trying to figure out. Again, if you just need the 30% of the $6.9 million, why don't you just take that money? Why does it have to come with a 70% extra on top of that? That's the part I guess people are having some issues with. If you need to fund the dispatch center, fund it. Why does it have to come with all the other monies that go along with it?
One thing to keep in mind, this is a one-time opportunity.
One time only?
Yes.
So this rate goes in and then will never be changed ever again until we come up with a new way to change it.
You either adopt it before 2017 or the ability goes away to adopt it. So,
gotcha.
So I think that's what the powers to be are looking at. So.
And are there different options besides the 0.25%? Can you go 0.20%? Can you go 0.15% where you don't have that extra money laying around that nobody knows what to do with?
Again, I don't have the answer to that. I suspect they're going for the maximum levy.
Sure, because you can never do it again, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right, yeah.
So, all right, good stuff, Tim, as always. We appreciate the time. 7:30 tomorrow night?
7:30, City Council Chambers, yes.
Good tickets still available.
So we'll get right down to work. No public discussion before, but the public is invited to come and attend and participate in the conversation about the ordinance, so. Typical Council of the Whole meeting.
Excellent. All right, Tim, great job as always. You can find tickets on StubHub as well as Scalping is Legal downtown.
General admission only.
General, it's a standing room only, yeah. If not. Great job, Tim. We appreciate the insight.
We'll talk next week.
Next week sounds good. Tim Mayer, City Councilman.